Hello and welcome to Growing Up B2B. I'm Ed D'Elia, president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. For over 60 years, and now across two generations, we've been helping B2B companies achieve next-level growth through brand distinction, quality lead generation, and sales enablement. Growing Up B2B was created for family business leaders who are passionate about growth, legacy, and making a lasting impact. Whether it's a multi-generational legacy or multiple family members working together, there's something truly magical about blending business with family. And we want to celebrate that right here on Growing Up B2B. So be sure to stick around to the end of the show and find out how you can be our next guest. Okay, let's get into it. Hello and welcome to another episode of Growing Up B2B. I'm your host, Ed D'Elia. I'm the second generation president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. Today, I'm joined by Priscilla Worthing, president of Worthing Air, a New Jersey HVAC company known for servicing some of the largest commercial clients in the region, including Amazon, Verizon, ShopRite, Unilever, and many others. Priscilla is the youngest of four siblings, and although none of her siblings entered the business, she found her way back after an early career as a Spanish teacher. What began as helping out her dad for a little while turned into a full apprenticeship, a master HVAC license, and ultimately the leadership of a 40-person company built on loyalty, long-tenured employees, and a strong sense of purpose. Her father, Michael Worthing, now spends most of his time in Haiti doing humanitarian and community development work. His mission of empowerment through education and opportunity deeply informed Priscilla's own leadership philosophy. She has not only modernized and grown the business, but she has also embraced her passion for training, developing bilingual talent, and shaping the next generation, including the possibility of a third Worthing chapter someday. Priscilla, welcome to Growing Up B2B.
Thank you so much. It's very nice to be here.
It's great to have you. So you grew up the youngest of four, and you were surrounded by the business at a very young age. What are some of your earliest memories of Worthing Air and your father's work ethic?
My very first memory at Worthing Air was my dad had a fabrication shop behind the offices, and they used to have nuts and bolts and screws and all different things that would kind of get collected. And my job was to organize them.
Okay.
Get all the bolts together and the screws together. And it was very important for the business.
Now, were you compensated for this effort?
I believe I was. Okay. I don't know if I ever saw that money, but apparently I did get paid for it. So
I used to get paid in Star Wars toys when I first started.
Right.
That was my compensation when I was around 7 or 8 years old.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, that was worth it.
Absolutely. I think mine went right into some bank account somewhere. So, all right.
So you once joked with me and we were talking earlier. You said, okay, it was a little bit of forced child labor. I was probably too young to be doing what I was doing.
Yes.
But nevertheless, you did it. And that probably left an impression on you. Talk about that for a moment. How did those early years shape the way you viewed maybe responsibility, leadership, or the business?
To be honest, at first, I definitely was a little resentful of the fact that I had to work in high school when my friends got to play sports. And I did some sports, but I wasn't allowed to do every sport because I had to do bookkeeping for my dad. And I did resent it at first. But over time, especially when I came back into the business, I really understood the value of that time and the skills I had learned even as a kid, mainly in high school. So it went from really not appreciating it to appreciating it.
Well, it's not every high school teenager that gets to learn bookkeeping in the context of business. That's valuable. It may not seem valuable when you're 15 or 16, but...
Yeah. I mean, who cares about an AIA invoice or payroll or insurance when you're 15 years old? But now it's very valuable.
That's funny. So before rejoining the business, you went off to be a Spanish teacher. So talk about that for a minute. What pulled you back? Talk about maybe what was happening inside the company at the time that you came back.
So I taught Spanish for 2 years and I was a little disenchanted with the experience I had teaching in that school. And I did really have this interest in business, but I didn't see a path forward in it. But my dad was starting to do work, humanitarian work in Haiti, and he wanted someone part-time to kind of watch over the shop and do some invoicing and light bookkeeping work. So I, at first, it started off really just casually with no intentions. to take over the business. It was really to help him and have a flexible job as opposed to be tied down to a job. That's how it started. But the condition of the company at that time was not great because he was gone so much. And as soon as I started, I did see inefficiencies at the company and also just a kind of laissez-faire attitude because nobody was there to motivate and encourage employees and show them a goal. Mm-hmm. So I quickly saw a need, and that's when, you know, I started studying business.
Got it. So I guess you're the youngest of four. I am as well, by 10 years. Mm-hmm. Did your older siblings, were they looking at the business at all? Were they thinking about it, or were they totally focused on other pursuits?
They were totally focused on other pursuits. Two of them lived out of state entirely. My other sister had a full-time teaching job she was involved in, and no one else was really interested in the business at all. And I seemed to have the most flexibility. By that time, I was bilingual, so I was able to speak to some employees in Spanish. It just seemed like a good fit for me.
Hmm. So that's interesting. I mean, given the bilingual team, you were able to step in. And I know that that's a very big challenge for some bilingual teams. And, you know, I've also learned that Spanish is not Spanish unilaterally. There's different versions of Spanish. And you could have two people that are quote unquote Spanish speaking, but have sometimes a hard time communicating because they're operating from different dialects.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. Mm-hmm. So you stepped in, it was around, what, 2013, right? When your dad kind of said, hey, could you use some help? And then something bigger started to take shape. Talk about that for a moment. What were you kind of feeling within yourself or seeing that was starting to pull you into a bigger way and a bigger role?
Yeah. So I think the biggest shift happened when I read a book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. I read that just on the side at home. And I realized that there were steps I could take to become an effective, successful person. And that I also saw in the business areas that could use improvement. At the mm-hmm. same time, I was seeing the need for improvement, and I was also seeing a path that I could become a successful contributor. I started thinking after I read that book, that inspired me to think as a leader and to start, you know, even dreaming about taking over the business.
Mm. Great book.
I read about 7 other business books before mm-hmm. I talked to my dad.
Excellent. Excellent. And so your dad, you know, obviously he was increasingly getting focused on his humanitarian work in Haiti, doing some great things, it sounds like. Maybe reflect on that for a moment. How did your father's interest and I guess really passion for humanitarian work influence you or perhaps the way you run or lead Worthing Air?
So my dad's passion to help other people did not start when he started going to Haiti. It was always there. And growing up, we always watched that. It wasn't mm-hmm. just my dad. It was my mom. It was the way we were raised. Mm-hmm. You know, our house, we joked, was a revolving door of people who would come and have some need or needed dinner or something. They were just very large-hearted. So that's the way I grew up. And it was never a question of if you would help someone in need, it would be how you could help them. Mm-hmm. And that shaped our business. How could we provide jobs for people? How could we help them with their family if they were struggling? And it's been really amazing to see over the 42 years in business how we've had collective success by helping people.
That's awesome. That's awesome. It's always amazing. And I think we underappreciate as young people, maybe because we're young people and we underappreciate a lot of things, but the incredible influence that our parents have, especially parents running businesses or other operations, and being exposed to that and seeing that even subconsciously, just watching it and observing it. You know, when you step up, you're like, gosh, I know a lot more than I maybe thought I did or gave myself credit for.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you just learn these things by osmosis, in a sense, being there.
Very true. Very true. So a couple of years later, then in 2015, mm-hmm. you sat down and you said, I'd like to buy into the business. So, you know, you'd been there for a couple of years. You'd obviously grown up with a lot of exposure to the business. So just talk about that moment. Like, what was that conversation like? And how did that go? And maybe even, you know, reflect on what kind of made 2015 the right moment to say, okay, it's time.
Yeah, so I had been strategizing about how to do this for several months. And my dad made a comment about kind of retiring, closing the business down, maybe selling it off to someone who had no experience with the business. And that was the moment I jumped. And I said, well, actually, Dad, I wanted to talk to you about me buying the business from you. And after he fell off of his chair, figuratively speaking, he was shocked. And it had never been a conversation we had had before. But I came wow. with a plan already in place that wow. I wanted to do. And he was very agreeable to it. He really loved the idea.
That's interesting. So he wasn't really even having that on the radar, per se. And it was you that
it had never been a conversation.
Okay.
I don't know if subconsciously, or I don't know if he, you know, wanted to know if I would be interested in it. As I mentioned to you in another conversation, or sometimes we speak around the topics a little bit. So I don't know exactly what he thought, but he was very surprised when I had a plan.
And I imagine walking in with a plan made it a lot easier for him to be receptive.
You know? Absolutely. Okay. Yeah. It wasn't an off the cuff remark.
Yeah. Yeah. My situation was interesting. I was about to take a job outside of Philly, and my dad and I sat down and he said, think about coming in and buying the business. And I'm like, well, you know, and my relationship with my dad was in a pretty good place. And I was like, well, I'm not sure. And then he said, well, think about it and decide this weekend, because next week I've got 3 people lined up to look at potentially buying D'Elia Associates. So I'm like, oh, no pressure there.
Wow. No pressure. Wow. Doesn't sound like you ever went to Philly.
No, turned down the job in Philly. The next Monday I was full-time at D'Elia Associates. So
wow.
Just like that.
Wow.
I guess I did okay with the decision.
It was a good move.
So along your journey, you've completed both the 4-year apprenticeship in your industry and also earned, and this is not an easy task from what I've been told, the New Jersey Master HVAC license. Talk about that for a moment, Priscilla. Why was it so important for you to have that knowledge and those credentials firsthand?
So I learned early on that just like a plumber or electrician, every company needs to have a bona fide rep license holder for HVAC. And we had individuals who held the license, but I always felt like somehow it was precarious to have someone else holding my license and being indebted to them in that sort of way. So actually, probably 7 years ago, I decided I was going to get my own license, maybe even 8. And I wanted to, if I was going to own the company, I wanted to really own the company.
Mm-hmm.
And I also wanted to be an expert on the topic, the technical side, although I wouldn't be a master, you know, HVAC technician to solve a data center IT issue like some of my other staff members can do. I wanted to at least know what they were talking about.
I think it allows you to speak a common language and also maybe know when somebody's giving you a straight story and maybe abbreviating some things that maybe they shouldn't be, let's say.
I interview everyone who comes into the business, and I have at some points found people trying to speak technically to me, but not knowing it.
Yeah.
So it's been helpful.
Yeah, for sure. So if we look at a lot of other trade-based businesses, oftentimes, if there are multiple siblings, sons and daughters, daughters are often not actively encouraged to step into a leadership role. So you did so, and you did so very deliberately, very thoroughly, and with a plan. So talk about that for a moment. What, if any, barriers did you have to push through, both externally and internally, to be accepted for taking on that role?
Mm-hmm. Well, internally, I definitely had to overcome a presupposition notion in my head that women had a position kind of not necessarily inferior to men, but the way I was raised, women were more domestic in the house, homemakers. So I had to really shift my view into having confidence. That was the one thing that I would say internally I needed to change. I needed to learn how to be confident in myself and my intelligence in a room full of men. Externally, I would say there were definitely people who were the gainsayers who just didn't think that I would have what it would take to do this. You know, and I heard it from them. She won't last more than 6 months in the business. Business will go under. She'll lose interest. You know, there was a lot of that. But that kind of spurred me on to actually prove that I could do it.
And from your perspective, do you see from a gender standpoint, do you see the face of the industry changing, or do you still see it as predominantly male-centric in terms of leadership?
Yes and yes.
Okay.
No, it is changing. There are more women in the trades. There are more women in property management positions. But I find that the decision makers still heavily men.
Mm.
And I'm hoping that in time I'll see a change there.
And certainly you're one that can advocate for that and
absolutely.
Say, hey, by the way, I did it.
Yes.
You can do it too.
Absolutely. If I could leave one legacy, it would be that inspiring women to not be afraid, not feel inferior, to take that challenge. And that it's very rewarding.
And I think a lot has changed in terms of how even in the most traditional of households, in terms of what's okay, what's not okay, irrespective of male or female. Yeah.
Right. The other challenge on that point is that I did in the process. So when I came back to work for my father, I had one child. Now I have three children. And having children, raising children while also working full time was challenging. I mean, there was no maternity leave for the owner.
Yeah.
So try not to take too many calls the first couple weeks with my young one, but it was a challenge. And I remember with my little guy, we actually made a little office for him to be there with us. And he sat through a lot of meetings before he was about three, 4 months old. So I think it was a challenge uniquely for a mom in the business.
That's a great story.
They've all been in the business many, many times.
That's funny. There was a previous guest and she commented, she said, yeah, I grew up at the factory. And I thought she meant, figuratively, yeah, I spent a lot of time there. She's like, no, mom and dad needed to watch my brother and I. So they set up a nursery next to their office. So I literally grew up at the factory.
Yes.
It's like, okay, that's quite literal.
Okay. Yeah.
And that thereby gives you the exposure to now take the reins because you've seen it from, around the time you were learning how to read and write.
Absolutely.
So that's pretty good indoctrination, I guess.
Yes.
Talking about how you lead at Worthing Air now, the company's had has successfully retained employees in some cases for many years. Talk about that for a moment, Priscilla. What have you learned about and what are you doing to create a workplace where people don't just come there, but they want to stay?
There's not one specific thing that I can say, this is the reason why people want to stay at Worthing. It's really, in my estimation, it's the attitude that we bring to our relationships. I love what Ritz-Carlton says, a ladies and gentlemen serving ladies and gentlemen. And treating my employees with that respect has been really important, where I treat them like they are ladies and gentlemen. And really caring about them, listening is so critical. Just really listening to what they're saying and what they're trying to tell you that they maybe aren't able to tell you. Coming back, giving them space, and taking to heart what they said. I think the first couple of years I listened, but I was so busy running around. I would forget that they needed this, forget that, and just forgetful. And I realized that that's showing them the wrong message. Mm. So just taking to heart, listening to them, and then really acting on it, proving that they're valuable. It's also a really enjoyable attitude to have because you get so much, feedback when you do help them and not just survive, but thrive in the business.
I'd have to think that by being able to listen with really two sets of ears, your English set and your Spanish set, for those that are Spanish speaking, I'm wondering, are you picking up things or hearing things maybe a little differently that others might miss, little nuances?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm so grateful that I learned Spanish before I ever knew I was going to get into business. I've interviewed in Spanish. I've also had hard meetings in Spanish. I've had to terminate employees in Spanish. But if I can share one story, there was a gentleman who had a medical need and needed to take time off. And everything was worked out in Spanish. And he took his time off. He got the help he needed. We worked out a part-time low stress position for him. And he came back and met with me last week and thanked me for that opportunity and said he's like back to full health. So just, it's more than just being able to tell them to do the job in Spanish, show up on Monday. It's really, really giving them that respect and care that they need and being able to do it in either language has
That's
been
awesome.
Really helpful.
And You know, as I understand, you've even run bilingual town halls when you do company-wide gatherings. So maybe talk about that a little bit further. How has that shaped the culture and the performance of the business, having that ability to truly speak to your team in either language, depending on where they're coming from?
I think it creates an atmosphere of respect between them. Because even though the English speakers might not understand what I'm saying in Spanish, they're seeing that it's just as important for me that the other half of the team understand and are on board with all of the things we're doing. So it's creating an equal playing field for everyone. Mm-hmm. That has been helpful for building respect between, because it's too easy to have a division. People speak English, people speak Spanish, and we're really trying to bring everyone together. So not only do I do town halls in Spanish, but we also do our training courses in both languages. And then we're offering some ESL classes to help them learn English. Ultimately, that would be beneficial for them.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And that, I would say, likely opens up you and Worthing Air to a talent pool that maybe other companies that don't have that fluidity or bilingual capability, you know, may have to pass on certain talented individuals that you can say, yeah, come on in. We literally speak your language.
Exactly. Yes. And another aspect, which is critical, is safety. I mean, we work in a physical industry, and just being able to have our safety talks in English and in Spanish, making sure everyone is staying safe. It's like it encompasses the whole business. Really making sure everyone understands, is on the same page.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And very advantageous, all those years of studying vocabulary words.
See that? Everything you did was all in preparation for this moment. You just didn't realize it at the time.
I had no idea.
That's funny. So getting back to you and your dad and making the transition happen, you and your dad spent a year sort of formalizing things, formalizing his role, formalizing your role, formalizing the financial transition. Talk about the approach you took, because it sounds like you were fairly deliberate and structured in your approach. And just, you know, talk about that for a minute, in terms of how that went.
Yeah, it was important for me to start with getting a valuation done of the business. So it will be an arm's length transaction. And we did that. That took some time. We agreed on a price. And then we spent the rest of the year focusing on how decisions would be made, because there was 5 years where we were partners while I was transitioning over to the ownership. So we really ironed out what decision-making would look like, what everything we could think of. And I definitely, people thought, you're going overboard, you're taking so long with this. But this is a big, big thing. And I've learned in my career and life that the more you communicate before there's an issue, the less likelihood of there becoming an issue. And that was the mentality I wanted to bring into the transaction, where there would be no surprises 2 years down the road. Everyone had their place in it. So yeah, it did take a while, a lot of time with lawyers, but overall it was very peaceful.
That's great. And it sounds like your father, I've not met your dad, but was amenable to that approach as well. Like, is that his style too? Or is he like, do you guys sort of align on that?
He was a bit more casual than I was at first about it. And I was pretty clear that I wanted to engage the lawyers and do this at an arm's length, because, you know, he had a lot at stake. I had a lot at stake. And I just wanted to make sure everything was done correctly. So it took him a little convincing to convince him that it was worth investing the time with the lawyers and getting this right. But at this point, I mean, it's been so seamless that it all makes sense.
Well, I think, and for our listeners, I think whatever stage you're in, if you're in transition or maybe just through the transition or contemplating, hopefully you take Priscilla's words to heart, because, you know, what she did and what a lot of people who've done it right have done is take time now so you don't have worry later. And I'm thinking about a brother-sister team who was Next Generation, and they had already been in place in the company, but sadly, their father suddenly passed away unexpectedly. And there was some scrambling, you know, there were some questions left unanswered. There were some things left unsaid. And you know, that was about a year of scramble. And to their credit and to their tenacity and having enough exposure to the business, they made the transition and they made the turn and they did so successfully. But don't think for a minute it wasn't hard, you know,
because
not only mourning the loss of a dear loved one, but also, okay, let's figure out what this person left in their wake.
How to leave the light, how to keep the lights on.
So I think what you did is a powerful lesson for others to follow. And hey, it's okay to be structured and it's okay to be very specific than leaving question marks.
Right. And just because there hasn't been a problem to this point doesn't mean there won't be a problem down the road. You have to, like with insurance, you have to plan for a worst case scenario and then you avoid it.
So you remarked something that I thought was kind of amusing in terms of the dynamic and of the relationship between you and your dad. You said you don't really fight ever, but you throw what you call, you throw hints.
Right, we do, yes.
Talk about that dynamic a little bit. What does that look like?
Yeah, I think it's in our culture, we aren't going to be ever, there'll never be like a loud argument or angry words thrown around. But we will definitely take our positions, do so in a way that you communicate a little bit, but just enough that they have to figure out what you're trying to say, but then you make it, you know, it's almost like a dance. You position yourself so you're clear, but you haven't said a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So we've always worked that way. There's never a real argument, but there is clearly taking positions.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned over time, it didn't happen right away, but I could push back a little bit and share my position. But everything is done very quietly.
That sounds more constructive than the way we Italians do it. So quite loudly, and then we hug lovingly after, you know, but still there's a lot of drama.
Yeah, but you probably get it done very quickly. We have to take a little longer figuring it out.
Something to be said for keeping the peace. And it sounds like, you know, you have a way and that way works.
Mm-hmm.
So looking down the path of it, you have three children now mm-hmm. who have, you know, kind of had some exposure to the business, you know, maybe starting to explore or express some interest in aspects of the business. You know, if they were to go down that path or come to you with a plan, you know, what do you hope that next generation, if it comes, might inherit from you, Priscilla? What would be your mark that you'd want to impart to them?
More than anything, it would be a disposition that values, I use this word, I love this phrase, the collective success. So I don't want them ever to feel entitled that I'm going to come into this organization and I'm going to, you know, have people working for me and I'm going to sit, watch TV and get paid. No. I want them to, if they do come into it, to come in with an attitude to serve,
mm-hmm.
to help, be useful, but really care about everyone growing together.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually took my little guy out of school for an afternoon because we were giving out turkeys at work, free turkeys for Thanksgiving. So I made him help me give people turkeys just to learn that we do this.
Mm-hmm.
If we have people to give stuff to us, we give to others. So I really want them to have that attitude that if we're going to get to the top, it's not going to be by ourselves. It's going to mm-hmm. be holding hands with others and bringing them with us.
That's some great lessons for them to learn and to be seeing at a very young age and to mm-hmm. be doing. That's great.
Right.
And I think that dovetails nicely in the next question I had for you. And this may be a legacy of your teaching days or just in your DNA, which led to your teaching days, but training. Training is clearly something you're very passionate about. You know, when you look out to the future, what do you see as sort of the next major workforce opportunity in HVAC? And how do you plan for and prepare and train that next level or future technician?
Mm-hmm.
So what's coming and how is your, you know, your passion for training going to lean into the next wave, if you will?
Yes, that's a great question. So I went to college for education and learned a tremendous amount about how people learn. So at some point I was on vacation in Sedona where a lot of ideas come to me. I love Sedona. And I said, it's training. That's my next step. That's where what the business needs. More than anything, it needs training. We can sell, but we need to have people, a larger group who's competent to add to scale the business. And I started really strategizing over not just a training program that would check boxes, but that every time they left that classroom, they would be more equipped.
Mm-hmm.
So forget, you know, just talk about hours and certifications. I really want you to know this material when you leave that material. So every class I'm putting together now has theory and practice. Mm. You know why the system works that way, and you know how to fix it. You know how to put it together. You know how to install it. And that inspires me. I love that.
Wow.
I love creating curriculum, but now it's about HVAC.
Yeah. Yeah. And to what extent is, and I ask this of a lot of guests, and it's showing up in all kinds of interesting and remarkable ways, but to what extent is AI showing up in Worthing Air's work, or maybe the resources that technicians have at their disposal, or maybe even how you administer and develop training curriculums? Is that showing up for you right now?
Yes, it absolutely is. So our technicians all have an AI program that helps them, not just with diagnostics, but also with sourcing materials. Mm-hmm. That has been critical. They can source materials so fast with their AI program that that's cutting down a lot on time spent in procurement. And then in the office, I use it almost every day, mm-hmm. Sometimes to kind of start thinking about a topic, get some ideas, research different companies. It never does the thinking for us, but it definitely speeds up the process.
Yeah. Yeah.
Creating checklists, you know, all kinds of tools that we're using. Do we utilize it as much as we could? No. But we're very open-minded to it, and we are utilizing it more every day.
Awesome. Awesome. So I don't know where the trends are pointing now. Maybe you can share just your perspectives. But I know and maybe it's starting to swing a little bit, but for a number of years, at least for clients we work with in the trades, they were all really, really worried about talent acquisition. Mm-hmm. You know, like, hey, we could do more work, but we just can't get the talent, the mm-hmm. professionals to do the work, or the ones we can get just don't seem to have the skills that we need, or the abilities we need, or the attitude we need, whatever it was. Do you see that starting to swing, Priscilla? Are more young people now a little bit more inclined to go into the trades, or do you still see that as a challenge?
Yes and yes. So there are more young people who are interested, for sure. You've done a good job training that you can earn while you learn, which is so great.
Yeah.
And I had an opening for one apprentice, and I got 300 applications. I mean,
wow.
It's tremendous.
Wow.
But the gap is still there, and the labor shortage of skilled labor is still there. So that's why our academy was so critical, because yes, we can bring in people interested, but having people who can then drive a van and do a service call and diagnose it correctly with no callbacks, there's a gap.
Yeah.
So right now, every technician we has a ride along who rides with them, just constantly learning, you know, we're trying to speed up that process in an effective way.
Yeah.
Where we can train techs faster than we used to be able to.
Yeah. And it's difficult. It's one thing to have the knowledge. It's the other thing to be able to apply the knowledge. And also, you know, I think it's like with many industries, it's a pretty easy day when everything kind of fits into place and goes exactly right. But you know, when you're in a trade where you're working on some of these very large scale engagements, where you're maybe working alongside other trades, and there's a lot of moving parts. You know, there's always that, hey, what if it doesn't go quite right? You know, what do you do then? And that's when, you know, that more experienced professional can maybe step in and say, let me take the reins back for a minute and show you what's what, you know?
Right. And you know, we're so thankful for technology like FaceTime, where if the tech doesn't know the answer, they can FaceTime a supervisor and they can look at it together. So there's all kinds of things that we can do now to help bridge that gap.
Wow. And it sounds like you are effectively employing technology to do that, and to give your personnel the information and the resources, not just what they need, but when they need it and at the moment, which is sometimes critical, right?
Yes.
So looking out to the future now, when you think about what's coming, maybe the next 10 years for Worthing Air, what's exciting you right now? What's exciting you about the future or the here and now?
There are a couple of things for sure. I've talked about the academy and the school. That's really exciting for me. We're also working on scaling the business. And what's really exciting to me is scaling the business requires me to be in a different role. I can't be a contributor so much. I love sales. I love putting together estimates. I love all of these things, being in the finance. I can't do that when we scale. So, but I do get the opportunity to hire really great people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm excited for that shift in my own job description. So I get out of the weeds and more become a visionary strategist for the business and less in the day-to-day operations.
That's awesome. So I think so many leaders, they grow and scale to a point and then they get stuck. And sometimes they get stuck because they can't take that step themselves to a bigger role, because sometimes that bigger role means I'm going to have to let go of some things that I really love.
You know,
ultimately it takes serving the business above self. You know, my goodness, if there was something that's been ingrained and trained in your DNA, it's just that, you know.
Yes.
And I think that's how you not just lead your business, but I would say from this conversation, how you live your life.
Mm-hmm.
That's very admirable and quite remarkable.
There is a connection there. I hadn't thought of that until you said that. But I seek to hire people in critical roles. And I think previously, and other business owners who didn't scale, we had a fear. I can't afford that person. I can't afford that person. That's too much. Can't do that. But you need to do that. You need to let go a little bit and invest in other people to scale. I don't regret it at all.
And it's an important paradigm shift, isn't it? It's from my, if I want to stay the way I am, I can't afford that person. That's correct. Okay. If I want to grow, I can't afford not to bring that person on, you know?
Yeah, it's a risk.
It is a risk. It always is a risk. However, if done correctly, a calculated risk, right?
Exactly.
And for an entity that's looking to scale, I've not known a company that's scaled without some investment and some measure of risk. Now, there's different levels of risk, and, you know, it all comes back to tolerance. However, calculated risks seem to often pay off. And usually if you're making a calculated risk, you're not going out on a limb
right.
You know, letting it all ride on.
No, it's a very calculated risk.
Yeah. That's great. So last question for you. If any of our listeners wanted to connect with you to learn more about you or your story, or to learn more about Worthing Air, what's the best way for them to reach out?
Usually LinkedIn is a good way to find me. I'm there often. Our company has a page there. Also our website, worthingair.com, to connect and learn more about the business. But I find myself on LinkedIn quite often, and that's a good place to find me, follow what we're doing, sharing all of my exciting news.
Awesome.
I like to tell stories.
Good.
So sometimes they come across in LinkedIn.
Okay. I have to make sure I'm following you as well.
You do. Yes. Yes.
So I wanna
look for my mashed potato post.
Mashed potato. Got it. Noted. Well, Priscilla, thank you so much for a thoughtful and very honest look at your journey, your leadership, and the evolution of Worthing Air. Again, we've been speaking with Priscilla Worthing of Worthing Air, and I'm your host, Ed D'Elia. And this has been another episode of Growing Up B2B. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great rest of your day. And Priscilla, thank you once again for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, thanks so much for tuning into Growing Up B2B. To explore more episodes and insights, visit podcast.deleonet.com. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please give us a rating or review on your podcast platform of choice. Having worked with hundreds of family-led businesses across my career, and being a second-generation leader myself, I'm on a mission to help every family business I meet achieve next-level growth for their organization. So feel free also to connect with me on LinkedIn, and let's support each other. You can also find out more about my company at deleonet.com. Again, I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, and thanks so much for joining us today. Take care.